Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Now You Know, talk radio where you get to ask the questions. Call us now at 877-NYK-RADIO. That's 877-695-7234. And now, Ann Mitchell.
Wow, it's another Monday night. Welcome to the show. And wow, you know, we really need to get that intro changed because, for one thing, our telephone number has changed. And so if you have questions for our guest, if you already know who it is or even if you don't, the correct number is 866-MONDAY-6. So give us a call. You can either just leave a comment with our producer or you could talk live to our guest, whom I will be introducing in just a few minutes. Again, that number, toll-free number, is 866-MONDAY-6. You can also email your questions or comments to us at comments@mondaynightradio.com. You can listen live via Skype. Just go right to our website, and the links are there. That's mondaynightradio.com. And while you're there, hey, sign up for our newsletter. But, of course, the quickest and best way is to get, well, not best, but the quickest way to get to us is to pick up that phone and call 866-MONDAY-6. That's 866-666-3296. You can also listen that way. So if you're on your way home and you're in the car and you have a Bluetooth headset or a speaker, of course, you can call in to the toll-free number and just listen. Okay, so before we get to our guest, and I have to tell you, I am so excited about this guest, let me tell you about next week's show just so that we can sort of have that on the back burner for you. So let me ask you a question first. How much do you really understand about breast cancer? Sure, you know that lots of women get it, and it has something to do with pink. You may even have done a run or a walk or a race for the cure. But do you know about nipple origami, areola tattoos? Do you understand the nitty-gritty, down-and-dirty reality of dealing with breast cancer? Well, join our guests next week. Both of them are breast cancer survivors who are going to tell you what it's really like and how you can best support loved ones who are going through it. And, yes, they will tell you about nipple origami and areola tattoos and much, much more. That's next week on Monday Night Radio. This week on Monday Night Radio, we are very fortunate to have with us Kelly Brosna. And I'm sorry, I probably butchered that. And so when I bring her on, I'll let her correct me because I've known Kelly for a few years. She's a dear friend, but I still always butcher her last name. I'm sorry, Kelly. Kelly is the author of the incredible cookbook, The Spunky Coconut. And the Spunky Coconut Cookbook is a cookbook that gives you recipes that are gluten-free, casein-free, sugar-free, and yet not taste-free. In fact, not only are they wonderful, delicious, and even decadent recipes, but they're natural. They don't have fillers or artificial sweeteners or anything like that. They are real, honest-to-goodness, down-home, yummy, yummy, natural, healthful recipes. And so even if you don't need to eat gluten-free or dairy-free or sugar-free, and hey, it's really not a bad idea, but even if you don't need to, you'll want to. So let me bring Kelly on. Kelly, are you there?
Yes, hi.
Hi, Kelly.
Yes.
I am so glad to have you here, and I am so sorry to have messed up your last name. Kelly, would you please tell us how you say your last name?
It's Brosna.
Brosna. I keep saying Brosna, and I'm so sorry. Please forgive me.
That's okay.
It's actually, as long as you can spell it so you can search for the book on Amazon, that's really the most important thing for us, I think, don't you, right now? Because we want everyone to get your book.
You want me to spell it?
Actually, you can if you want to.
Sure, go ahead. Oh, that's okay. It's B-R-O, Z-Y-N-A.
There you go. But they can also find your book by searching for The Spunky Coconut on Amazon, right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, before we go into the book and the recipes, would you tell everyone listening just a little bit about how you came to be such an expert on working with foods that are gluten-free, dairy-free, sugar-free, et cetera?
Well, I first discovered that we needed to be on this diet about 6 years ago, and I began studying with my nutritionist and naturopath back in the East Coast, and she's one of the best, and she taught me everything she knows, and I worked with her for a couple years and with another gal who worked with her, and just years and years of practice.
Uh-huh. And can you go a little bit into why you said you first became aware you needed to eat that way?
Yes.
Do you mind sharing
sure.
why?
No, not at all.
All right. Let me tell our listeners that Kelly has done things with her family that I consider nothing short of miraculous. And Kelly, as much as you're willing to share, I think it's wonderful because, first of all, it's a wonderful story. And second of all, it shows everyone just how incredible a woman and mother you are. But third of all, it also really shows the healing power of food.
It does. In fact, I started writing a book, which was not a cookbook, about nourishing my children back to health before I was even cooking, you know, the way that I am now. But how it all started was our daughter, our firstborn daughter, when she began eating solid foods, she began eating wheat and gluten and dairy, and she began reacting both physically and emotionally. She stopped gaining weight. She stopped growing for about a year, a little over a year probably. And the doctors weren't really sure what to do. They suggested more milk and more wheat. And she was throwing up, and she was very sickly looking. We went through a period where we were in and out of the doctor's office every few days. She became violent, and she was clawing my face. It looked like a cat had scratched up my face, and I would be bleeding and crying, and she would laugh. I mean, it was very frightening the way that she was behaving and treating me as, you know, a 1.5, 2-year-old. And so that's when I started going to my nutritionist for help dealing with her. She had us get a test, which anyone can do. You don't even need a referral from a physician, and it's from Intero Lab. And Zoe, my oldest, tested positive for gluten intolerance and dairy intolerance. And within a week, she was acting differently. The violence stopped. Within a month, she had gained nearly 5 pounds. Another month went by, she gained another 5 pounds. She started growing. It was really, really impressive and amazing. And the pediatrician at the time who wasn't in contact with my nutritionist and my naturopath was just amazed. I remember in the beginning when I brought him the test from Intero Lab, he said, "Well, I don't know, but the proof is in the pudding. We'll see what happens." And So sure enough, he was very impressed. And then about the same time that Zoe was beginning to recover, our second daughter, who was a baby, began having severe problems. And so I went on a very, very, very restricted diet when I was nursing her for a year and a half. And that made a huge difference in how she slept. She didn't sleep through the night until she was an older toddler, but the diet when I was nursing her really did help her get a little bit of peace. And then when she began eating, it helped her more and more. And, you know, she's now doing much better. I can be more specific. It's up to you.
Well, I... It's up to you as well. Go ahead.
Yeah, Ashley, well, should I tell more about Ashley?
Yes, if you want to.
Okay.
If you're willing, because it's an
amazing
story.
Sure, I'd love to. When Ashley was 4 months old, that's the second who I went on the restricted diet for my milk, when she was 4 months old, she had a near-death reaction to a DTaP vaccine, and she had seizures for 2 hours, and we didn't think she was going to make it, but she did survive. Her head expanded overnight. It increased in size 20%, and they sent her to a hospital, a very good hospital in Baltimore, Maryland, to make sure she didn't have hydrocephaly, which she didn't. And so they weren't sure what exactly to make of it, and they called it a head growth spurt. head growth spurt. She completely stopped developing from that 4 month reaction until she was one. And maybe even later, it was about the time she was one when I finally said, you know, I think something is wrong here because she's not developing. And when I say not developing, I mean from the time she was 4 months to one, she didn't really move. She didn't respond. She nursed, but she was nowhere near eating by the time she was one. In fact, she didn't eat solid foods until she was two. I had to puree all her food and spoon feed her until she was 2 years old. When she was 18 months, she was diagnosed with autism, and at that time, she was having a whole new onset of symptoms, all the classic autism symptoms like flapping her hands up and down like a bird, flapping, stimming, which was, you know, self-stimulating behavior. She would open and close the drawer in the kitchen for hours and hours and just watch it open and close, open and close. When she wasn't stimming, she was screaming. She didn't respond, like I had said before. She didn't make eye contact. And all of this went on until, I guess she was about three, maybe. And at that point, you know, after much diet and nutrition and working with DAN doctors, which stands for Defeat Autism Now, we were able to really help her recover significantly. As you know, very significantly, she has had so much blood work done and all sorts of tests and urine tests that have shown all of the toxins that we've helped pull out of her from her reaction. She had a lot of aluminum. She had a lot of mercury that we pulled out, and this is all documented, you know, through labs. Mm-hmm. And today she's doing so well. She talks. She makes eye contact. The diet alone, when she stopped having dairy, she stopped flapping. She stopped stimming all day. She stopped screaming all day. So the diet alone, before we even began removing the metals and other toxins, made a huge improvement in how she was doing.
And I can certainly, as you've mentioned, I have seen Ashley many, many times. We occasionally still get to socialize, which is lovely when we get to see each other. But the difference... The advances that Ashley's made, all attributable to you and your dedication, which really is what ultimately led to your writing the cookbook, right? Which is, as you said, that a lot of this diet work really, sort of is the foundation, because it's what she has on a day-to-day basis. and your whole family as well. And so you develop these recipes using the very strict guidelines that you had of not being able to have any gluten, not having any dairy or casein, not having any refined sugar, but perhaps under the watchful eye of yourself as the highest moral authority, which is you're her mom. And no one is more committed to curing her or helping her heal than you. And so you've just done something phenomenal. And I also want to mention Entera Lab. It's funny that you mention that because our listeners probably, I'm going to guess, have no idea what that is. And indeed, I would not have had my own doctor with whom I'm working ask me to test with Entera. And so Entera Lab is an independent lab in Texas. And you can FedEx them a sample. We're not going to go into quite detail about what those samples consist of, but you can collect them at home. And they are able to tell if you have a gluten sensitivity, a dairy sensitivity, a soy sensitivity. They can tell if you're not digesting your food properly. I mean, they can run on one sample all these amazing tests. And so
they're great.
I'm glad you mentioned them. And absolutely, you don't need a doctor to do this. As it happens, you know, again, my doctor recommended it. I'm having my hormones tested, and my main doctor had run this whole battery of tests, and one of them was the gluten. Was I sensitive to gluten? And it was, I think, a blood test, and it came back saying I was not sensitive to gluten. And then I sent all of my labs to this specialist clinic up in Washington, and the doctor there said, well, you know, your gluten test came back as being negative for gluten sensitivity, but you have X, Y, and Z, and I've never seen someone with that profile who was not sensitive to gluten, so I want you to have the test done by Entera. So that's how I found out about them, and I'm waiting for those results
right
now.
Yeah, more and more doctors are using them. I mean, it's great that you don't need a referral in case, you know, you don't have someone that you're working with, but all of our medical doctors and nutritionists and naturopaths are using Entera Lab.
Well, I'm excited to get those results back, and it's not expensive. If you're just testing for gluten, it's under $100, and that's really that's cheaper than going to the doctor, really, unless you have good medical coverage, which, well, that's another show. So you are listening to Monday Night Radio with Kelly the Spunky Coconut. You can call in with your questions for Kelly at 866-MONDAY-6. You can send your questions over Twitter to @MondayRadio or email them to us at comments@mondaynightradio.com. Well, Kelly, let's talk about the recipes and the book and gluten-free food. And first, I'd like to ask, you know, the recipes in the book, and they are wonderful, and I have had the great privilege of having food that you have prepared with your own hands, which is always a treat. But a lot of them seem like riffs on old standards that it would never have occurred to me to try to do gluten-free, and they are so wonderful. And as you know, I've experimented with some gluten-free work myself, inspired by your cookbook, and it turns out that it's not that exotic, and it's not that difficult. It's just, in my experience, having been led through your cookbook, it's really just thinking slightly differently. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about your method for adapting. And I'm not asking for any trade secrets, but, you know, for the people out there who are having to do gluten-free and have kids, and, you know, the kids kind of want to eat, quote-unquote, normal food, you know, sort of what's your advice for how to really roll up your sleeves and get your, you know, get your hands in there, but without feeling like you have to just learn a whole new repertoire?
Well, you know, so many whole foods are just naturally gluten-free. You know, you think about smoothies and eggs if your child is not allergic to eggs, you know, vegetable, meat if you're not vegetarian. But as far as baking, you know, there's so many great blogs and websites and cookbooks that are really simple and easy to follow. And I personally love, as you may have guessed, coconut flour and shredded coconut and coconut oil, because the health benefits of coconut are just amazing. And it's so nice to work with. Coconut flour in particular is very high in protein, and it's nearly half fiber. And you only need a little bit. And so what it does is it expands in liquid or whatever sort of, you know, moisture you put with it. It will absorb and expand. And it really cuts down on the amount, total amount of flour that you need per recipe. And it just creates this terrific light texture. And, you know, anyone who's had my baked goods can probably attest that they have great texture, and I think that comes so much from the coconut flour.
Can you talk actually a minute about that? Because there are so many conflicting messages out there about coconut, and I can just hear people in the audience. I can feel some of them cringing because it sounds like, oh, my God, it's coconut, and that's really bad for your – it's high in fat, and it's your cholesterol, and – you know, it really got a bad rap for quite a while. And I, you know, could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I can recommend a video by Dr. Mercola. And he talks about the myth of coconut oil, which I think is what you're referring to. The coconut flour is not high in fat. And I don't think that I don't know why anyone would have a fear or a myth about the flour, but there has been some myths surrounding coconut oil because it is saturated fat. But the thing about coconut oil, as Dr. Mercola explains, is that it's nearly half of that saturated fat is lauric acid. And lauric acid is only found in one other place, human milk. It's phenomenal for you. It's highly easily digestible. It converts to energy, actually, instead of being stored as fat in your body. So it does not cause one to gain weight. In fact, Dr. Mercola, another specialist, recommends coconut oil to people who don't want to gain weight, people who are even trying to diet and lose weight. Because it is so easy to digest, and it is so healthy for you and good for you, and converts to energy. So it's actually completely a myth, and it's very good for you.
So I just to not put too fine a point on it, but you're right that it was about the coconut oil, but that in general started giving coconut a bad rap. And so coconut flour and coconut butter, which are the things that you use in your baking occasionally.
I use the oil.
Oil. Well, now, so here's
what
I want to ask you. What's the difference between coconut oil and coconut butter? And coconut flour, where does that come from that it doesn't have the demonized aspect of coconut in it? Go ahead.
No, it's okay.
No, I'm done. Go on.
Okay. When they remove the coconut oil, that's where the flour comes from. That's what they turn into the flour. So there's
is
not
it like
I mean it's not a, is what?
So it's like defatted coconut?
I think I would agree with that statement. That sounds about right, yeah. I mean, you can read more about it, like, for instance, Tropical Traditions is a great company, and on their website they explain how they make the flour, how they make the oil. It goes into more detail. My area of expertise is more, you know, baking with it and using it.
Sure, fair enough. So let's talk about that, because I think I sort of sidetracked you when I asked you to sort of expound on the benefits of coconut. But
I did a good enough job.
You did a great job, but I definitely do want to get back to the baking, the recipes. And so you started to say that you use a lot of coconut in your baking, and go on. Tell us more.
Yes. Well, because as I explained before, because of the way coconut flour absorbs liquid and expands, you actually don't need much of it. I don't think I have one recipe that calls for more than half of a cup of coconut flour.
And, oh, wow.
Yes. And then what I do is I like to combine coconut flour with a little bit of, say, tapioca flour, maybe a quarter of a cup, you know, other things I add to it, shredded coconut. Sometimes I add, I do have recipes with grains also, so I may use brown rice flour, but it doesn't ever reach the quantity of flour as in a traditional baked good. And the same goes for the sweetener that I use. I use, as you mentioned before, I use natural alternatives to processed refined white sugar. And there's some very good reasons for that. I mean, we all know the bad news about white processed sugar or high fructose corn syrup and things like that. But what I like to do is combine stevia, which is an herb from Paraguay, and I use the tincture, which is basically a method of extracting the sweetness from the herb by soaking it. And uh-huh. the company I use soaks it in purified water, and they add flavors. You can get it unflavored, and it's 100 times sweeter than refined sugar. So it comes in this, you know, little tiny bottle. I don't know if you've seen them. You probably have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they are, those little tiny bottles will last me months and months and months, because since it's 100 times sweeter than sugar, I can use, you know, 20 drops. I can use a quarter of a teaspoon and have that same effect as if I added 2 cups of white sugar. And then what
wow.
I like to do is, isn't that amazing? And then I combine it with, yeah, and then I combine it with something like honey or applesauce or coconut sugar, which is another natural sugar. And I only need, you know, maybe a quarter of a cup of honey or coconut sugar or applesauce, or half a cup. So it's, you know, a quarter, a third the amount of sweetener as a traditional baked good would be. And that's really, really important to me and my family, especially getting back to Ashley for a minute. She had so much trouble with candida, which is a yeast overgrowth in the body. And we did do some supplements to help her get rid of that, some natural supplements, herbs and garlic and things like that, grapefruit seed extract. But it was very important not to keep feeding the yeast and the candida, and sugar feeds it. That's how it lives. That's how it grows. So it was really important to us to get off of the, you know, 2 cups of white sugar or 1 cup of white sugar.
Well, you know, this actually is going to dovetail beautifully into, we have callers waiting to talk to you. And before we go to the callers, I just want to remind everyone listening that you can call in to talk with Kelly or to give her a comment at 866-MONDAY-6. That's 866-MONDAY-6. I just love that number. It's so cool and just so great for us. Or you can send us a comment by Twitter to @MondayRadio or email us at comments@mondaynightradio.com. So let's go to the phones. Let's go to Rob in the Bay Area. Good evening.
Hello.
Rob. How are you? Hi. What's your question for Kelly?
Well, my question is this. Recently, I had to make a gluten and dairy-free meatloaf. I just removed the breadcrumbs and milk, but I'm guessing it's not so simple for a lot of recipes. So how do you go about re-engineering a recipe?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Well, for instance, with meatloaf, I found that almond flour was a great substitute for bread, and that's how I make it. I love to do meatballs and meatloaf that way. But substituting is tricky. You know, it really does take a little bit of figuring out, you know, if you're not going off of someone else's recipe or website. And, now that I've been doing it for so long, I sort of have a formula in my mind of what I know works using the kind of flours that I like to use and the kind of substitutions that I use. So that's kind of, you know, I base all of my future recipes off of what I've learned so far. Thank you for that question.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much, Rob. Okay, and let's see, and now let's go to Gabe. He's calling from Chicago. Gabe, you're on the air with Ann and Kelly. How are you tonight?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm very well,
good,
thank you. Do you have a question for Kelly?
Yeah, I was wondering if there are any health benefits to eating gluten-free if you don't have a gluten allergy.
I think so, definitely, because gluten is very sticky and binding. People who are gluten-free are, shall we say, more regular. It's a much cleaner diet, more easily digested. There's a strong case to make that you perhaps absorb the nutrients from your food more easily on a gluten-free diet. So you have that better absorption and better digestion. And I definitely think that there could be benefits to being gluten-free, even if you don't have to. In fact, I know people who haven't been tested and don't seem to have a reaction to gluten, and they, you know, choose the gluten-free diet just because they prefer the way it makes them feel and the energy that they have, and for better overall health and fitness.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, Gabe. Well, thank you very much for the call, Gabe.
All right. You're welcome.
As a reminder, you're listening to Monday Night Radio with Kelly of the Spunky Coconut. She is, I consider, the queen of gluten-free, dairy-free, and refined sugar-free recipes. She is an incredible baker, and she has other things in her cookbook as well, but that's really what I think of her mostly as, just because I've had the pleasure of eating those recipes. And Kelly, is it true? Are you working on another book?
It's true. Yes. In fact, I haven't really announced what the title of the next cookbook is. But since I saw on your website that you had mentioned it was about desserts, and it's true, it's absolutely fine. It's coming out very, very soon. So I'm excited to share it with you here first. It's a grain-free baked goods and desserts. So everything is completely grain-free in this one. So it's no gluten, like the first cookbook, but also no rice and other gluten-free grains.
Wow. So the only thing I can think of that's a dessert that is grain-free is those decadent chocolate torts. I can't even think of another one, at least it's a baked good. Can you give us some teasers?
Sure. Well, for instance, the cake that you last had when we were together was from my next cookbook, and it's a chocolate cake. And because there is no grain, it is mostly cocoa powder, there's some coconut flour in it, a tiny bit of tapioca flour, and I have a whole array of ice creams, pies. There's an entire breakfast section, which includes cinnamon rolls and bagels, lots of yummy treats.
Okay, wait a minute.
There's
a grain-free bagels.
Yes. And cinnamon rolls.
Wow. I the mind boggles.
They're delicious. Yeah, you don't actually need grains to make baked goods. It just took a little, you know, recipe development and working and took a little time, but yeah, you don't need them at all.
Wow. So a reminder
for those.
And
I don't think you'll miss them.
Well, as I said, I've had your food, and so I've never missed anything when I've eaten your food, except for that kind of icky, bloaty feeling I get from eating too much dairy and gluten, maybe. Give us a call at 866-MONDAY-6 to talk with our guest, Kelly, of the Spunky Coconut. Again, that's 866-MONDAY-6. Those of you in the chat room, we see you. We can certainly take your questions through the chat room as well. Just type them in. You can also send us a message on our Twitter feed at Monday Radio, or you can email us questions and comments at comments@mondaynightradio.com. And, Kelly, we've had a question come in through our Twitter feed, and this person would like to know that they noticed that on your cookbook it says casein-free, and I've been saying dairy-free, and maybe that's my bad. And can you tell us what the difference is?
Sure, definitely. Casein is the protein in dairy, mostly cow dairy. And this casein protein in dairy is almost identical to the gluten protein, which is why we avoid it. And it's been shown to have a very similar reaction in patients with autism. So I'm being sort of specific there when I say casein, because I do sometimes use clarified butter, which is butter that has had the casein removed.
Okay.
So, and the lactose also. But you can always substitute another type of fat or oil if you don't use butter, or as I say, you know, ghee, which is clarified butter. But that's why the specific term of casein.
Interesting. Okay, so the recipes, like what percentage of the recipes in your current book, The Spunky Coconut, would you say have some dairy in them, like clarified butter, even though they're casein-free? And you say that's dairy and, or that's casein and lactose-free. So really, is what's left something that anyone typically would have a problem with?
Most doctors do not see reactions in their patients when they use ghee because it has been clarified and the casein and the lactose have been removed. I'm sure that there's very rare cases where people don't tolerate ghee. I haven't personally met anyone who doesn't tolerate ghee, but I know some people just have a personal preference not to use any dairy products whatsoever. That's the only type of dairy products that I ever use. And like I said, you can always substitute another type of fat or oil in place of it. I always use nut milk in all of that. That's my preferred non-dairy substitute. And I make my own nut milk with nuts, with cashews. I make a cashew milk. I make almond milk. And I have videos actually on my website showing you how to make those nut milks. They're so simple. I think people get, you know, scared off from making their own nut milk because it sounds, you know, like it might be a big deal, but it's really not. It's so simple and so much healthier, I think. There's a lot of health benefits to eating, you know, those kind of live, whole, raw foods.
And it does sound time-consuming, and I actually have a recipe for almond milk that I use, and it's called Cheater's Almond Milk. And it's easy. It's so easy that I bet it's even easier than the recipes that you were just talking about. And remind me after I tell you my Cheater's Almond Milk recipe to make sure you tell us what your website is where we can go see those videos. But here's my Cheater's Almond Milk recipe. You take a big jar of Marantha raw almond butter, and you stick it in the fridge. And then when you need almond milk, you take 2 tablespoons of the almond butter and you mix it with filtered water, and voila, you have raw almond milk.
Yeah, I've heard of people doing that. That's a great option.
Well, it's a great option if you don't go through a lot, as we don't, but you want to have it available when you really need it. And but like I said, that's cheaters, really. Cheaters almond milk, and yours is the real deal. And where can we see those videos?
Oh, sure, on thespunkycoconut.com. I have videos. Every time I put up a recipe, if it includes nut milk in the recipe, I link to the video in the recipe so that you can watch the video if you're interested in how to make your own nut milk. Because, like I said, it literally takes seconds to make nut milk.
Really? Seconds?
Would you like to? Yes, seconds. Would you like to know?
Tell us. Yes, tell us.
Okay. Oh, sure. It's so easy. Before you go to sleep, you soak a cup of either cashews or almonds. Those are my two favorites. You wake up in the morning. The nuts have soaked overnight. You strain them. You put them in your blender. You fill the blender to the top cup line, and you puree. Now, if you're using almonds, you'll want to strain the pulp. So when you pour your pureed milk into your pitcher, you want to use like a cheesecloth or a nut milk bag and just squeeze mm-hmm. out that wet almond pulp. If you're using cashews, you don't even do that. You just puree.
So they just
come
out smooth? Oh, wow.
Yes. The cashews don't even need straining. You just take those nuts that have soaked overnight. Oh, yeah, it's so easy. If you have a
that
blender,
really
you can
easy.
Make them in. Yeah.
So I have to tell you that we have pulled up your website, and I just noticed that you have a new graphic at the top. It's very pretty, very nice.
Thank you. Thank you.
And there is an awesome testimonial at the top of your website now. So if you don't mind, I'm going to read that for our listeners. Do you mind?
No, thank you.
Okay. It says, this is from the owner of Benefit Your Life, I assume, .com. And here's what she says. Hey, Kelly, your almond muffins are the best ever. If the whole world knew what they were missing out on, I predict they would go insanely crazy trying to get their hands on a copy of your cookbook. We started with 10 in our store on Monday, and we have only one left. I think I will live off of vanilla pudding and almond muffins for the rest of my life. That is quite a testimonial, and I do have to say I agree. The cookbook is amazing. You can find it on Amazon. It's called The Spunky Coconut, and Kelly's website is thespunkycoconut.com. And Kelly, would you tell us about that vanilla pudding and those almond muffins?
Thanks. Yeah, the almond muffins are one of my favorites, my favorite all-time recipes, and you can either make them with a little bit of grains, which in this case would be brown rice flour. I think it calls for a half a cup of brown rice flour, and then the rest of that is made up of almond flour. So they're mostly almond, but the original recipe had a little brown rice flour. I've also updated them to be grain-free for people who don't even want gluten-free grains. And in that case, I've substituted buckwheat, which often people think buckwheat is a grain, but it's not. It's actually a seed in the rhubarb family, and it is grain-free being a seed. So I have two variations that are both equally good, I think. They're delicious. I love those almond muffins, and you can add cherries or strawberries or blueberries or nuts, whatever, you know, suits you that day. The vanilla pudding that she's talking about is another great thing to have around. I like to keep it in the freezer in ice cube trays to pop into smoothies. It's also great after it's been chilled in the fridge. You can put it on top of things. You can put things in it, you know, use it like with nuts and seeds for granola. So very, very versatile.
And what's that made out of? Because it's obviously dairy-free.
Yes, everything I do is nut milk, like cashew and almond, and coconut. And I like to combine coconut milk with nut milks so that everything doesn't just taste entirely like coconut.
Uh-huh.
So that has a coconut milk and vanilla. It has cashews that have been soaked. That's sort of the base of what gives it the texture is the cashews. And a lot of what I do, you'll see on in my recipes, is very raw inspired. I like the concept of using nuts in place of dairy to give you the texture of pudding or yogurt or, you know, for sauce, to thicken sauce and things like that.
Now, that actually brings up a question, which is maybe just a little bit out of your area, but maybe not, just because it's something I've experimented with, and I have found it frustrating as all get out, which is making yogurt out of nut milks. Have you had much success with that? Have you tried that?
That's my favorite thing to eat right now. I've been playing around with it. I've been doing it for I don't know how many months now, but I got started, you know, several months ago. A friend of mine recommended a place where I could pick up a yogurt maker at Tuesday morning. I'm sure you know Tuesday morning. They were having yogurt makers like 60% off, and so I raced over and bought one, and I've been hooked ever since. And I've come up with two yogurt recipes that I just think are phenomenal. The first uses mostly cashew milk, which, as I said, you know, before, is super easy. You don't even need to strain cashews. You just blend. So it's cashew milk and a little bit of coconut milk, vanilla. And the trick that I've developed, which, you may have heard before, I heard people talking about using just their probiotic capsules that people like to take in the morning or whatever their vitamin regimen is, and just opening up those probiotic capsules and putting them into, you know, the nut milk when it comes down to the correct temperature, and, you know, you keep the yogurt warm for 10 to 12 hours, and those good friendly bacteria munch and grow, and voila, you know, after you refrigerate it, you have this lovely dairy-free probiotic yogurt. And it's just divine.
You know, and that is exactly what I was trying to do, and it didn't work well at all. So hopefully, do you have a yogurt recipe up on your site?
Yes, it is. They are
Yay.
On my website.
Okay, well, I will definitely have to try that again. To remind everyone, we have just about 10 minutes left with Kelly, so get your calls in. The number is 866-MONDAY-6, and you can Twitter us at Monday Radio or email us at comments@mondaynightradio.com. And let's take another call. We have Jeff in Boulder. Hi, Jeff. Good evening. How are you?
Hi. Great. How,
what's
how
your
are
question
you?
For? Oh, I'm well, thank you. Do you have a question for Kelly?
Yeah, I wanted to try some gluten-free foods, and actually, it's a but. I'm on a budget. So, what are some recommendations for cheap gluten-free foods that I could try to get into this?
You know, the great thing that's going on right now is the cost of eating gluten-free. I think it's getting better. I think it is going down because more and more people are being aware, more and more people are being tested and finding that they have this problem. But, you know, as I mentioned before, there's so many just whole foods that are naturally gluten-free, you know, fruits and vegetables, meat, fish. But also, you know, even big stores, like you mentioned, you're in Boulder.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Costco's around here even have gluten-free. They have
cool.
have crackers, chips, they even have flour blend. I don't know if you've heard of the Bob's Red Mill gluten-free flour.
Oh yeah,
no, but
that
I have
now. King Super.
Yeah. And King Super's also. But at Costco, you can get a big blend of flour, you can get crackers, and it's in bulk and, you know, save a lot of money like that.
And
well, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. You're very welcome. Thank you for the call. I was going to say, but I guess I'll take this off the air, that one of the things about being in Boulder is there is, and Kelly, I think you might know about this place. It's called Berry Best Smoothie, which is on the corner of Arapahoe and Folsom. And they carry a whole line of gluten-free products because the owner's wife has celiac disease. And so it has to be really careful about
gluten.
And
I do as well.
And you do as well. That's right. That's why. Yeah. You know, and actually, that brings up a question. Do you have a quick moment? And again, you're not a doctor, obviously. We know that. So this isn't medical advice. But do you have a handle on the difference between, you know, celiac disease versus gluten intolerant? There's something in there called SPRU, which I have no idea what that is. I know that is the little pieces of plastic from injection molded toys, but obviously that's not what celiac SPRU is. So there are a lot of terms out there that are not synonymous, but to people who are not that familiar with them, you know, they're all kind of muddled together. Are you able to sort of quickly explain those differences?
I can tell you what I know. Like you said, I'm not a doctor, but I can tell you what I know, which is that celiac is a gene, which I have, and I know that people with the celiac gene can get the SPRU or the perforations in the intestine, which is very life-threatening. And I'm not sure what the complete difference is between celiac and being intolerant. I know that people who are intolerant often have trouble with malabsorption, and they have, you know, reactions, digestion problems from gluten. So I wouldn't recommend any gluten, you know, to anyone, even if they're intolerant. I've heard, you know, time to time you hear people say that they're gluten intolerant, so they're on a low gluten diet. I would not recommend that at all. I think that if you're intolerant or if you're celiac, that the best thing to do is be gluten-free altogether, you know, 100%. But, that's pretty much the extent of, you know, my knowledge on that.
Well, and that makes perfect sense to me. In fact, you reminded me, I recently met someone who said that they have to be gluten-free mostly, but every once in a while they can have gluten, and the thought was, you know, because I said, well, how do you know how much you can have and when you can have it? Well, you don't have it until I start feeling bad. And I'm thinking, well, if you know it's going to make you feel bad, if your body is telling you it's making you, you know, this doesn't feel good, why would you eat it at all? Go ahead. Some people can even what?
I was going to say some people can even be asymptomatic where, you know, like myself, I'm celiac and I've been celiac my entire life, but there were times in my life where I thought I was fine. And you can go for periods of time without any symptoms at all and, you know, then end up in the hospital with, you know, a hole in your intestine and it's very bad. So good to know and avoid.
Right. No, that makes perfect sense. I want to talk about ghee, and I'll tell you why. I love the stuff. I don't know if you know this about me, but I actually lived in an ashram for a while.
I do.
As a teen.
Uh-huh.
And that's where I first became hooked on ghee. It is the most incredible. The flavor of ghee is just amazing. And for those out there who don't know or didn't hear earlier when Kelly talked about it, ghee is clarified butter. And I remember making it at the ashram, and you just basically would heat the butter, melt it over low heat, and keep on letting, like, the impurities would come up to the top, and you skim it off till eventually you have a crystal clear yellow liquid, which is what's left after you take out all the impurities. And apparently, as what I infer from what you said, those impurities are also what contain the casein and the lactose. And
right.
Or somehow in the process you get rid of it. So what I want to ask you, a couple of things. First of all, ghee has a unique flavor. And, again, I love it. But I have to wonder if in the recipes in which you use it, does it take a while to get used to that different? Because it's not a typical buttery flavor. Okay.
Well, I don't usually use enough that I think you would taste it.
Darn.
you know, it might have a very, very faint, you know, creamy flavor or very slightly buttery flavor, but I don't usually use enough to give a very strong flavor. I guess you could if you wanted to substitute some of the coconut oil in my recipes, you could substitute ghee and get more of that buttery ghee flavor, definitely. But speaking of how to make ghee, I don't know if you know, but I actually have a video also of making ghee on my site as well.
Kelly,
so for people that are interested
in... Sorry, I'm sorry, but do you have a YouTube channel? So if someone wanted to just go and look at all of your videos, like, do you have YouTube/ Spunky Coconut?
Gosh, I don't know what the link is. I just go to YouTube. I have them all on my website. I have a label, and it says videos. And you can click on my videos, and they go to, you can go to YouTube, or you can watch them on my website. They're pretty large. They're almost the same size as they are on YouTube on my website. But
okay.
I do have probably, I don't know, 7 or 8 videos on YouTube, which are linked to my website.
Okay. And, you know, and someone who is going to look at your website to look at the video will be able to figure out your YouTube channel from that as well if they want to favorite you on YouTube or let you have it. And so that's awesome. Well, so what I wanted to ask you then about ghee was, you know, we live in an area, and I think many neighborhoods or areas now have Indian grocery stores and et cetera, and you can buy ghee pre-made. Is there any reason to not do that as far as you know?
No, as far as I know, you know, it's very nice to be able to just buy it and not have to make it yourself. The reason I often make it myself is just to save money. You know, that the caller before was asking about how to eat this way and save money. And a lot of the things I do, like making my own nut milk and making my own ghee, are just for the purpose of saving money. But it's great to be able to walk into a store and buy ghee. And I've never been to a health food store that didn't have it. And it's great.
Okay, well, we have just a couple of minutes left. And I'm going to give everyone all the links again and the information about your book and your website. And while I'm doing that, would you be willing to be thinking about maybe a really fast, easy recipe that you could give out over the air or at least point people to on your blog, so to leave them with one of your favorite recipes? So while Kelly's thinking about which of her many wonderful recipes she wants to share with you or direct you to, her website is thespunkycoconut.com, and you do have to use the www, so it's www.thespunkycoconut.com. And you can and absolutely should buy her book on Amazon.com. So just go to Amazon.com and search for The Spunky Coconut, and it will pull it right up. And it's got, one of the highest ratings I have ever seen across many, many customer reviews, up to well over 4, almost 5 stars, which is really impressive. And she does have a YouTube channel. We're not exactly sure what it is, but you can get to it through her website if you want to go ahead and favorite that channel, so you'll always know as soon as she posts another one. And I think that's about it. Our guest, Kelly Brazina. And Kelly, do you have a recipe ready that you've picked?
Yes. If you go to my website, the very first recipe, which I have up right now, is a really simple chocolate chip muffin. And it's made very simply with almond butter, eggs, a little bit of coconut flour. You'll see that it's very simple. It takes just a few minutes to blend the ingredients together and put them in your muffin tray with paper liners. They puff up, and they're very light and fluffy and really nice, warm, or even refrigerated.
They look wonderful, and it is muffin season. We are heading into muffin season, so that is awesome. Kelly, thank you so much. This has been really, really wonderful. Will you come back if we ask you nicely?
I'd love to.
Well, thank you so much.
It's been great. I've really enjoyed it.
Well, we have too, and it's been very enlightening. Thank you so much. That's Kelly Brazina, and she is The Spunky Coconut, and you can go to her website at www.thespunkycoconut.com, You can also find her on Twitter at Spunky Coconut. And get her book, The Spunky Coconut, on Amazon. Very, very well worth it. And again, remember, next week, everything you didn't know about having breast cancer, the new
that was really excellent. I learned a lot.
Survivors.
You're listening to Now You Know, talk radio where you get to ask the questions. Call us now at 877-NYK-RADIO. That's 877-877-9999.